Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Ernest, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
All right, guys. Welcome back. EYL, Hometown Heroes Edition.
Yeah, Chi-Town.
Chi-Town. What's going on? The first Hometown Heroes that we did was in Houston.
That's true.
Houston.
Shout out to H-Town.
Shout out to Mike Brown and shout out to Chris Senegal. Those are our first Hometown Heroes. So if you know Earn Your Leisure, we traveling around all of our major markets and we touching the people. And when we touch the town, we try to do a couple of interviews with people that are doing big things in the community.
Shout out to Mike, man. He had a big campaign. And shout out to everybody that supported his Win-Win Foundation, man. That was dope.
Yeah, for sure. That's a fact. So all right. We're in Chicago. And we had to tap in with the good brothers, the Downing brothers. So
Southside, to be exact.
Southside.
Sure. Yeah, right. Sure. Southside
to the world blow up. For sure. So Anthony and Anton, say that correctly, right?
That's right.
Okay. So just left out an H and a Y.
Here we go.
So first and foremost, thank you guys.
Man, we appreciate being here, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
We listen to the podcast. I dream one day that we'd be on here. Yeah, here we are.
Dreams come true.
Welcome to
Ernie. You know.
Nah, dreams come true.
Yeah, so we're in Chicago. We on the south side. We're in 79th Street, right?
That's right.
The legendary 79th Street. Shout out to Chance the Rapper. He said 79. So, yeah, we out here. So, all right. These guys are legends in the community. So they're firefighters by trade, yes. And they are celebrities because now they are on HGTV. They have their own show on HGTV, and they're real estate investors. They're very interesting guys. And so we're going to talk about a lot of different things with them. But before we start, well, the first segment I want to talk about is that a lot of times we talk about entrepreneurship and business. Mm. And a lot of times what stops people from being an entrepreneur, being a business owner is that they, you know, it's kind of risky to just jump out there and, you know, you have a 9-to-5 job or a regular job. One of the things I like about you guys is that you do both, right? So you're firefighters and you're still firefighters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you're on TV and you're real estate investors. So we haven't covered, this is a very interesting job because I'm a financial advisor and I work with some firefighters in New York, and firefighters have it good. They make good money. They have strong unions, especially in New York.
We have a very strong union.
Chicago Fire.
They get a pension, and they only work like 2 days a week. I know it is like York. They work like 24-hour shifts, like 2 24-hour shifts. Mm. So what happens is now you have like 5 days where you're not working, which leaves a lot of time where you can do other things, right? So absolutely. Is that how it is in Chicago?
Yeah, that is a great synopsis. It definitely has worked to our advantage to have that time off. Because, I mean, essentially we work eight to nine 24-hour shifts a month. So we had like 22 days off. And the question is, what are you going to do with those 22 days that you are free to do what you want? Mm-hmm. And then eventually real estate enters the picture for us.
So, all right. So talking about the fire department, because this is something that we – especially in our community, it's not enough black firefighters, right?
True.
Right. So what got you guys into the fire department? And like, what are the steps that people can take? Because I think even stuff like that is, there he goes.
He's phoning him up. We're off duty, though.
We're not going with those guys.
Does anybody have to leave?
Yeah, what got you to the firefighter, and what's some of the steps that somebody can take to become a firefighter? Because like I said, it is a good profession. It's an honorable profession as well.
Yeah, I mean, so the origin story for the fire department part of our story is back in 2006, I was fresh out of college. I was an educator. I started off in education.
Yeah.
In Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I was coming, driving home, and I still lived at home with my mom. No shame in that. You know what I'm saying? I was out of college, had my first job, and I was saving up money. And she said, hey, can you get a gallon of milk on the way home? So I stopped, and I was at a red light, and I saw this big CTA bus with a sign on the side of it saying, answer the call. It's like, and it had like the website and had a firefighter on it. And, you know, in education, at least, especially during that period of time, and even right now, you know, they do these like big layoffs. And, you know, I'm like, man, if I lose my job, because, you know, the youngest people on the job are the ones that go first, you know? And I was like, well, I need a plan B or something. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Never thought about becoming a firefighter, but maybe I'll check it out. I look at the website. I go into the parking lot of the Jewel's grocery store. I walk in, and right on the door, the automatic door, was the same sign. It was an 8x11 on the door.
Answer the call.
Right, literally, it said the same thing. Answer the call. So it was kind of biblical almost. So so I was like, let me get this down in the milk and hurry to get home. I got home. I looked it up. And I saw, you know, I saw the union contract. I saw the pay. I saw it to my, you know, I'm, you know, it would look like an adventure because I'm physically gifted. So I was just like, you know, it'll be, you know, something fun, but also, you know, I can pay the bills. And on top of that, we talked about this. They got a strong union. You know, you never see, you know, firefighters getting laid off or whatever. Mm. So, and I asked my mom, I said, Mom, let me just sign up all my brothers. Like, give me the social security numbers.
She's doing, you know, not kidding.
Know, you know how, like,
he ain't even asked none
know,
of us.
I don't know about y'all, but most moms, you know, usually has everybody's birth certificate
and everybody's social security number.
So my mom came out with this little 10 thing that had all our information in it, and I signed up all my brothers to take it.
How many brothers you got?
So it's five down in brothers.
Okay. How many? Two. All right, you guys are twins.
Yeah, and we have an older brother, and we have two younger brothers. Yeah, Tony, Andre.
They're not twins, though, right?
No. Okay. So. And now I was the only one that was too young to take the exam. So I signed everybody up to take the exam. Unfortunately, my twin brother, in his wisdom,
did not
show up to take the exam.
Look, our dad was CPD. He was a Chicago police officer. So I was thinking, like, man, that's what we know. I'm just going to take police exams. Or I'm not going to take no exam. I was up here waving my degree. Like, I'm going to use this degree.
What was the degree in?
History.
Okay.
So, you know, and I was
a teacher too?
It did not work that way. I ended up working for the Illinois Lottery doing experiential marketing for $32,000 with no health insurance.
Way to use that degree, man.
So, needless to say, he should have took my advice and sat down next to me to take the exam. But I took the exam, and I walked into McCormick Place. It was 20-something thousand people there to take this exam.
How many people were they hiring?
They ended up hiring, I would say, about 1,000 people.
Out of 20?
Off of that particular list.
Wow.
You know, and this is back in 2006. And I had to sit on the list for 2 years. But I was number 554 out of like 17,000 plus that actually passed the exam. So, I mean, it was just a blessing. Like, I just didn't realize, and I didn't know that I hit the lottery.
Who sat next to you at the exam?
Well, I actually, to my right, there was an empty seat with his name on it. It said Anti-Down. It's alphabetical order. So my brother Dre, he was sitting next to my left. He was actually there.
Oh, y'all all were sitting next to
each other? Yes, it's an alphabetical order.
Except
so
we didn't show up.
I saw all my brother's names on the table. You know what I'm saying?
Look, Mom, we made it.
Your other brother didn't show up either?
No, he didn't show up either.
Thanks, guys.
So two out of the four of us that signed up actually took the exam. And I actually, got the score. So 2 years later, I got the letter saying if I was interested right on the day of the Bud Billiken Parade, which is a big deal in Chicago. The Bud Billiken Parade is the second largest parade in the country, and it's actually the largest African-American parade in the country. So I was actually doing a little side hustle driving in there. And when I went out to the mailbox, I saw the letter saying that I got the job.
Boy, I was sick.
Dang.
I was sick when he got that letter. I was like, I can't believe I didn't take that test, man. And my Social Security number is like almost exactly the same as his.
Right.
So I would have been in the same class with him.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
So then I was like, okay, it's time for me to start taking exams.
Right. So,
But that you're talking about the written exam, right?
Yeah, the written exam.
But people kind of overlook the physical exam, because I know we have some friends in our town of Greenberg that have been volunteer firefighters for years, and they just can't pass the physical part. How demanding is that? Right.
The exam it actually has changed in the last 10 years, because now they've gone to a national called the CPAT,
mm-hmm.
where everybody takes. But yeah, it was a different thing.
Candidate physical ability test.
Right, and it actually is rigorous. Okay. Like, because I mean, you have to walk with a weighted vest, like a 70 pound weighted vest on a what am I thinking of right now?
Track?
No, not on a track.
On a treadmill.
On a treadmill, right. And that's actually the hardest part, because after you get done with that,
it's the Stairmaster.
No, I mean the Stairmaster, right?
Yeah.
After you get done with that Stairmaster with the weighted vest, you're so tired that even though the rest of the course is relatively simple as far as you being able to raise a ladder and use a pike pole.
And then crawl through a tunnel.
All of that stuff is super hard after you've had that weighted vest on and you've been on that.
For three straight minutes,
for
man.
For 3 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So, like everything else in life, though, you go on YouTube, it's there. So you can train for what you need to do.
Mm.
When it came to the written exam, they actually give you the source material, so you can actually study for that.
So what's on the written exam? Is it like science and stuff?
No, that written exam is not hard, man. No,
well, look, we're talking about Chicago, but each Chicago's exam is literally, you read it and you answer the multiple choice questions. If you can read,
you got a chance. Right.
You have a chance.
Halfway through the battle.
That's half the battle.
That is half the battle.
People that barely graduate high school can definitely pass that exam
if you can read and comprehend. But that's not. If you go into the suburbs,
no slight to y'all.
If you go into the suburbs or you go to other municipalities, they do have math questions on there. They have friction loss and things that.
And I feel that like the exams are a lot harder, because that's what they ended up doing is taking the Dalton Fire exam, and Dalton physically borders Chicago to the south, so you know. That exam was way. I was like centrifugal pump. What the hell? it was nothing like this one on the Chicago exam, at least according to Anthony. But the blessing about it is, when the list came out, unlike Anthony being 5'30", I wasn't 5'37". Then you'll keep hitting my hand.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry
I wasn't 5'37" like this guy right here. And I wasn't 138. Mm. I wasn't 50 either. I was number 4.
Four out of 10,000.
And they were, no. It was only like 350 people. Okay. There's like a suburban exam. But then they were only hiring 6, and I was number 4. And I was like, okay, God, you wanted me to answer the call.
Exactly.
So do you need
and
a
that was only 6 months later.
Do you need a college degree to be a firefighter?
No. You need a high school diploma or a GED.
So well, how much money can you make? Because in New York, I think you make like $100,000, yeah. Like $120,000.
I think a lot, but a lot of the money comes from overtime, correct?
Like how's that? Yeah. How much money can you expect to make in a
year? Well, for Chicago, your starting salary today, 2019, as a candidate, first day in the academy, is $56,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So you start at $56,000. You get a pay bump at 12 months of $10,000.
Oh wow.
So now you're at 66 after you made your probation, which is 1 year.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then you get steps every year from that point. Well, yeah, every year from that point. So basically right. I've gotten a raise every year.
Oh
and
wow.
I've been on the department, I've been on for 10 years. So you hit the lottery. The thing is though, as much as we're talking about money right now,
we ain't talking about the downside.
The you actually do risk your life.
Oh yeah, you could die.
So
no guarantee of coming home.
There's no guarantee of coming home. Yeah. My firehouse is literally just right down the block. It's 10 blocks down, right here on 79th Street. And two men that I have worked with died in the line of duty, and I've carried their casket.
God bless. God bless.
Yeah, rest in peace.
God bless. I do want to say that it's a great job. Great money. We enjoy ourselves. We laugh, have fun.
Yeah,
great food at the firehouse. All this and that.
I had a similar experience because one of my actual classmates passed June 10th of 2017, line of duty. So it's jarring sometimes and sobering. As dope as the salary is, or the people that pat you on the back when you're at the grocery store and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to deal with that reality every time we go to work.
Yeah,
we might not come home.
Yeah, you said in Chicago, y'all are like first responders, right? To any type of
anything
scene.
That happens, we're the first ones there. Somebody gets shot, a fire truck or a fire engine is pulling up. You know, if it's a car accident, we're pulling up. Heart attack, asthma attack, anything that happens in the city, because we're medically trained, we're the first ones for everything. It's a hazmat incident, somebody spills oil all over the expressway, we're there.
Yeah.
So
I mean, they call us the fire department, but we're really an all hazards department.
Okay.
All hazards. Yeah, so we do everything.
So all right, so okay. So you guys are real estate investors, right? So
that's right.
As I said, what the thing with the firefighter is that you work only 2 days, you only work 2 days a week. So it leaves a couple, like 5 days where you're not working, which leaves a lot of time to be creative and do different things, right? So what made you, was that one of the things that encouraged you to become real estate investors, being that you had free time on your hands, or like what got you into that?
Man, it was a challenge for my mom.
Oh, wow.
I remember I got my first paycheck and I came home happy. And I think about this, that first paycheck, it was $854. I thought I was a baller. Because a month ago, I was
down, broke college student.
I was at the University of Illinois getting $150 every 2 weeks for my little student job. So I got this first paycheck, and I think my mother felt that energy and was like, nah, you need to pull that back. And she sat there, she said, sit at the table, don't move from that spot. I'm like, am I in trouble? Like, I'm
right. Or something? He got his first paycheck.
It's
supposed to be a momentous occasion.
Right, it's supposed to be a celebration. She's like, well, do you have a 401k? I was like, well, we can't start a 401k until, because I was working at Job Corps. I was a career counselor at Job Corps.
Okay.
That was the first job.
Shout out to Job Corps.
Job Corps. I was there for 10 months before I started with the Chicago Public Schools. But, you have to be there for 12 months to start a 401k. And she was like, well, I want you to start, an investment. Mm. So she was like, I want you to start with MetLife. I want you to take $100 a paycheck and put it into this retirement account. And I'm like, $100? I only made $854. And she was like, no, $100 has created this. And she pulled out all of the, she was really transparent. First time in my life, I'm 22.
Mm-hmm.
She put all of her papers for each one of her retirement accounts out.
Mm.
One of them had $150,000, $160,000 in it. Another one had like $50,000 in it. Another one had like $25,000.
My mom wasn't playing.
So she had four different accounts, and she showed me the statements and the balances. And she said $100 a month from every job I've had since I moved to the United States has gone into it. And no matter what job, when I transfer the job, I continue paying $100 into that one. And now I had $100 into this one, and this one, and this one. So, like, you know, $400 a check over the course of your entire life since you've been here has gotten me to this point. So what I'm asking you to do is only what I've already done. I was like, okay, Mom, I'll do it. She gave me the number. I called and set up my first, you know, retirement account. But then in that same conversation, she said,
here it come.
You're not a real man. Ooh. Until you own the floors you walk on.
Damn.
I said,
thanks, Mom.
I'm like,
I know. You don't even know what to say to that.
I'm not a real man.
He don't got one either. You know,
bro, I'm telling you, I felt some type of way, bro. And then from that point on, I said, I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you. So I started, not only did I start that retirement account, I started putting money away because, you know, I'm living at home and she only asked me to pay for like the utility bill, you know, whatever, the electric bill. And the rest of it, I was able to just put away. I put that money away. And over the course of 18 months, I saved up $6,000 and I had, I got my credit score to like 660, 680, something like that before I left and got my first apartment, you know, just because I needed my own privacy, my own space, whatever. But because of that conversation, it put put me on track to have the ability to buy my first crib, which I did at the age of 25.
That's powerful. So, I mean, y'all are born and raised in Chicago.
Yeah.
But mom's from the Bahamas, right?
Yeah, Nassau, Bahamas.
So, I mean, the mom sounds like she's been on point, right?
Yeah. What's your mom, when you have an immigrant parent, man, you realize that they're going to tell you stories like, we had to walk all the way to school.
Tell me about it.
And walk back. We had to help with Aunt Grace's store. You know, we didn't get to go do whatever. Yeah, the beach was right there, and we saw the beach. We didn't go to the beach until Saturday. You know, like stuff like that, you know?
But did y'all have land out there as well?
Yeah, we still do.
Okay.
Yeah, we're building new construction on it right now.
Well, shout out to the Bahamas, too. We know that they, you know, they're recovering from the hurricane.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right.
And our last event that we had, we were able to put together a pallet, and together with other Bahamians from the
Chicagoland area.
Yeah, the Bahamas Association of Chicago, we were able to put 8,800 pounds worth of water, non-perishable food, and clothes and send it to Grand Bahama.
Yeah, so if you are listening, please, they still need your help.
For sure.
We still need your help.
For sure. God bless. So, all right. So now in the second segment, we're going to go into your star level shows, HGTV. We're going to talk about that and how that came about. All right. So now we're going to go into, you know, your local celebrity status. And shout out to my guy, Jamal Jeffries. He's from Chicago. And he's a friend of ours. So when we got, before we got in, I'm like, yo, you know these guys are Downing Brothers? He's like, oh, yeah, the guys, they from the South Side. They the guys from the South Side. How was that Chicago impression? That was good? The guy.
yo, can I tell you quick? Yo, when we were at the event and everybody's like, yo, man, I like them gym shoes you got on. I'm like, what? They like them gym shoes. Yeah. I'm like, the kicks? They like the gym shoes, man. I'm like,
definitely call them gym shoes in Chicago.
The guys, the guys. Everybody like, yo, the guys. Yeah, me and the guys, so yeah, shout out to Chi-Town. But so all right. So you're firefighters, right? And then you start your real estate investor career. Right. But then how did you get picked up to do a TV show? Like, how does that work out?
Man, let me tell you, it didn't happen on purpose. We were helping our cousin rehab this six-unit apartment building when we got a call from Troy Pryor, who runs the Creative Cypher here in Chicago. And we went to college with him. And he said, yeah, I got this director that wants to do this torture scene, and we need like a basement or something like that. Are y'all working on any properties where y'all haven't finished the basement yet? He was like, yeah, man, come on over to this building that we're working on right now.
Right.
You know, over here in South Shore. And so when he comes and they look at both of the basements because, you know, it's a six-unit building, so they kind of have like separated basements. And as he's getting ready to leave, he turns to us and he's like, man, have y'all ever thought about doing a show on HGTV?
No.
No, this is a side hustle, bro. Like, not at all. But he was being dead serious.
He was serious. And then he literally pulled out his phone and said, nah, man, I want you to talk to Craig Harris, man, that's one of my frat brothers, and you know, he's really serious in this TV industry. He has he has a show out now and this and the other. And he actually put us on speakerphone. Like, he didn't give us a choice. Mm-hmm. He put us on speakerphone, and now we just like, oh, hey, how you doing?
No time like now.
Yeah. So we started talking to Craig. He asked us all these questions about what we do, where we're from, so on and so forth, you know, what properties we're working on. Mm-hmm. And I guess to get to know our background and our personality. And then after that, he was like, hey, well, you know what? I need you to send me some pictures and a bio.
We did it that same night.
Then it got real
because
serious.
Because they were being so serious, we were being serious,
too. Now we
too.
Had to be serious.
Yeah,
you know? Gotta see the moment, man.
So EYL is the educational platform, and we kind of, like, dig deep. And I think this is a good segment to talk about as far as, like, people that might be in this situation, right? What does it look like? Like, what is an offer? Do they come with a first offer? Do you counter offer? Do they just say, okay, this is, like, the flat rate we give people, like, how does that look? How do you know you're getting a good deal? Like, you have a lawyer? Like, how does that work out?
So, well,
we had to go get a lawyer right away.
Yeah, we got an entertainment lawyer, and then he explained to us what the industry standard is. That's like a key word, industry standard, for when you get paid for someone who's in your exact position. Someone who's, for us, no TV experience, never done any of this stuff before, and he actually was able to tell us this is exactly how much people get paid.
Right.
And, but it was a unique situation for us because we weren't just getting paid for
being talented in front of the camera. We were also getting paid on the actual real estate.
Oh, true.
Right, and then all the resources that they give you when you're actually on.
Explain that. So they're giving you deals?
No. We had to find the property ourselves.
Okay.
And plus we didn't have 100% of like everything that HGTV gives. Their talent because it was a pilot.
Yeah, because you don't get all of that stuff until you go to series. Right. Then they give you a much bigger budget.
So, like, the Property Brothers, their budget is out the wall.
Oh, yeah, that's as big as it gets.
So, all right, but what do you mean a budget? Like,
they have a budget for how much they will help to pay for the contractors. They give you a budget of materials. That they can contribute to through their sponsors and things of that nature.
So, let's say that they give a salary, let's say, of $100,000, and they give a budget of $200,000.
Right.
The $200,000 budget, you find the properties, they give you a budget of $200,000, and you use that $200,000 to actually fix up the home.
Right. Now, you got to secure the property yourself, though. That's still on you. You have to secure the properties.
One of the things I like about what y'all were doing, it was, like, opposed to that other show, was like, every time I watch it, it's like they find a property, it's $700,000, it's gonna be $150,000 to renovate, it's $850,000. Nah. And when y'all looked at it, y'all like, yo, listen, man.
No,
we don't do that. Like,
one, we wanted to do properties in our own neighborhood.
Right.
And we wanted to be authentic, too.
So right. I read that. I was just like, look, man, y'all were looking for properties, obviously, in your neighborhoods, right? And it was like, the properties are going for like $200,000, $250,000. That's more relative. Like, we can reach that. Having a property that's $1 million is not attainable for us at this moment. More people can do the $200,000, the $150,000.
Yeah, I think, I'm listening to, like, they have callers. Like, we've been on radio shows where callers call in. Mm-hmm. And I think, or we've had people, who jump on and make comments on our social media. And I think the thing that they appreciated the most is, like, man, just being everyday people, being sincere, being honest about what we're doing, where we're doing it and why, and then not just being transactional, but being transformative.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, we have to actually care about our neighborhoods and not just try to get over. And then on top of that, if anybody listens to our podcast or sees us at a seminar, we actually tell the actual numbers. This is how much the property costs.
Yeah.
This is how much we had to bring the closing cash. This was the interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
All of those different things, because we want people to learn from our experiences. So it's not just, it's not just entertainment, but we want to educate.
So a TV deal, is it like 1 year or is it like per season? How do they gauge, like, okay, we're gonna renew this for a second season? Like, how does that work?
The TV deals are much like the NBA or
no, it's like the NFL.
More like the NFL.
Nothing guaranteed.
Right. The pilot was the only part that was guaranteed, even though we signed a contract for the full season. Mm-hmm. But it let us know
they have the option.
Yeah.
How many episodes is a season?
Generally, either 10 or 12.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but you got paid for the whole season, even if they didn't release?
No, we only got paid for the pilot episode.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Pilot was one episode?
One episode.
Yeah, so after the pilot, depending on the ratings of the pilot, they will say, we're going to pick this up for a season.
Right.
Okay. The ratings and the politics.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's more politics because our ratings were
now something else amazing. y'all do that, that is very intentional, right? Y'all hire people that look like us, right? And not just us, but a lot. I saw like women, specifically women that look like
yeah,
us.
Yeah, you noticed
man.
That.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, man. I mean, all of that was intentional because we knew we only had one shot. Like, you really feel that way.
Yeah.
So we've been watching HGTV since, you know, forever, mm-hmm. you know, since we were in college and things like that. We wanted everyone to see that we really actually work with people that look like us, that the neighborhood was our neighborhood, things like that. Like, you know, it was super important.
Right.
And we even asked people who were riding past, whenever they saw all of those TV cameras in front of our, in front of the house we were working on, they would stop and say, "Hey, what's going on, guys? What y'all doing here? Da 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 da." We spoke to them. Mm-hmm. We weren't trying to act all high and mighty or nothing like that. We let them know what's going on.
Let them know what's going on. Why we doing it? So on and so forth. So I mean, it's like so we can have that positive social impact.
Yeah.
And people feel included, and they understand like, yo, what we're doing is actually going to make the neighborhood better. And on top of that, we're not pushing, you know, taking a $200,000 house and making it into a $500,000 one, and now nobody can afford to live in the neighborhood like overnight. Mm-hmm. You know, so. I don't know. It's just common sense type of things. You know, even with the alderman, the city council member. You know, we got her involved and let her know what was going on and be inclusive of everybody. So I mean, that's why our journey is kind of different.
So even all right. So we talk about the publicist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that part of HGTV packaging or was that your own brand?
No, we
packaging?
Got our own publicist.
So what made you decide you wanted to get a publicist?
Well, one, we wanted to take control of our own narrative. And take control of the direction absolutely. And opportunities, right? Because, you know, when you get an opportunity like this and you're on national TV, not just local TV, but national TV, mm-hmm. you know, you have to start thinking about, like, you know, how much exposure you can get, how many opportunities you can, you know, basically create out of that, like partnerships, endorsements, business deals. Because the other thing, too, is you got what happens on TV and you got what's happening in real life. And, you know, we want to continue to grow and create more actual transactions for, you know, our real estate business because we want to flip as many houses. We want to scale. Scale is a big word. Mm. Like, scaling means you go from doing just one house at a time to doing two or three houses to going to commercial properties. And, you know, now once we were made aware, because awareness is like the biggest thing. That's why this podcast is so awesome. Because it's like it may raise our awareness of all what's of available to us. So we can start pursuing those.
Thank you.
Those
for real.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, appreciate it.
For,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I think about assets over liabilities. Like we were like, what assets can we create? And what partnerships can we create? And that's why the publicist getting us all that exposure opened all of these doors that we currently have.
And so, our publicist understood that we wanted to be on black platforms just as much as we're going to be on ABC or WGN. Mm-hmm. Those things, of course you want to be on those too, but we wanted to be on WGCI, you know, a black radio station. We wanted to be on WVON to reach parts of our community.
Mm-hmm.
Like WVON kind of caters to like the middle-aged, you know, African Americans and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted, our publicist was able to get us into those spaces as well as like the big stations.
Yeah, and it's crazy because like what y'all doing, and my man Mike, shout out to Mike, like he always has a word that he sticks with. So narrative is what's like usually his word. Mm. He's like, yo, y'all are changing the narrative because when we think, especially from New York, when we hear the South Side of Chicago, we think violence. But y'all are changing the narrative. Are y'all seeing the impact that people are trying to continue like down your path as well?
Mm. Speaking to that, the neighborhood we picked, Peel Hill, is one of the best black neighborhoods in Chicago. So like when people got to see that, they got, again, you're right, for the first time got to see, wow, they didn't go to Inglewood was where the people are shooting and stuff. I thought black folks lived in bad neighborhoods. Nah.
We have good neighborhoods.
We have good neighborhoods too.
It's important to know.
Yeah. And then seminars, right? We are in position now, shout out to Jerry Greer and Guarantee Rate, making it available for us to have seminars to educate people about home ownership and how to get financing and how to buy properties and do everything that they see us doing. And that's the thing, making it available to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because with corporate sponsorship, we're able to get so many more people an opportunity to get in on real estate the way we're getting in on real estate.
And it's a big need for it. People are super excited. I mean, just think about, just last night we were at the networking social. How many people came out because they're really serious about starting a business or owning property? Like, there's a big niche there that needs to be filled. There's a problem that needs to be answered.
How did you get the corporate sponsorship?
That actually kind of fell by accident because so Jared
right
happens to be having a business meeting.
Yeah, now you know how you say you're Jamaican, right?
Yes, sir.
We had a Jamaican restaurant.
We were at Ja Grill in Hyde Park on the south side of Chicago.
Yeah,
shout out to all the rosters.
This was all of that,
and it was just like the second time our show was coming on TV, and we didn't want to be at home, and this wasn't any of that type of stuff. We wanted to sit and eat. Some West Indian food. We're Bahamian. We wanted to eat some West Indian food and watch ourselves on TV. And then Jared Greer and one of his co-workers or colleagues, they were there for some type of lunch, business lunch.
Whatever.
And he walks up to the bar because we were eating at the bar. And he looks up at the screen and he looks at us like, is that y'all?
Exactly. And the crazy thing about it is, it's not like we did business immediately. Like, we exchanged information and it was like four, five, six months or something like that before we actually reconnected. And then we, kind of exchanged ideas. This is what we want to do. We want to start having these live seminars to educate people about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would benefit, his business and Guarantee Rate and so on and so forth. And it's just, it was a natural fit.
That's dope.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All right. So as far as, this is an interesting conversation because we're in a day and age now where TV's kind of dying. We talked about this off camera.
Right. Yeah.
And it's streaming, but even like YouTube, right? So it's like for you, you're on TV, right? But you have a podcast and you do stuff outside of that as well. Mm-hmm. So for somebody that may want to follow your footsteps, right?
Right.
Is it more beneficial to be on a network or is it more beneficial to start your own thing through independent on YouTube or the streaming? Like what's the differences and what's your personal take on it? Cause you actually have a TV show on a network. So,
right. So I think, really you got to start somewhere. I mean, starting your own, like a lot of people are becoming famous now. You think about like Lil Nas X, he was on TikTok and blew up because he started his own content. You got to create your own content and create your own exposure and create your own opportunities. Our story was different because we weren't trying to do this and we kind of fell backwards into it. And everything even now, we're continuing to just like be ourselves and then opportunities come to us. And that's the other thing too. Be true to yourself. Don't try to be anybody else. And create your content and be good and be of service to people.
Yeah.
Help
that's the biggest part.
With whatever you're doing. Don't tear people down. Be of service and try to be helpful and bring joy into this world. So I think create your own content and then start networking, go to the conferences, start meeting people who work in the industry, publicists, people who work in PR. There are people who are already doing the things and are already working in the spaces, and you just got to figure out how you can develop relationships because relationships are everything. Everything that's happening in our lives, because if you have a conversation with us a year from now, I don't think we're really prepared to talk about what we're doing right now, but a year from now you're going to see it, and it's all because of the relationships that we have are creating the opportunity for us to move from residential to commercial.
I think the big thing is that oftentimes when you look at hip hop, or if you look at black folks and other aspects of entertainment, we're big upping ourselves constantly. Look at this Cristal, look at this mansion I'm living in, or all of that type of stuff. But until your conversation is about how you're gonna tell other people how they can get what you got, it stalls. Like, our biggest thing that we're doing right now is telling people how to get the multi-unit buildings that we have that translated into flipping. And cash flow and all of those type of things, and showing people the numbers and saying you can do this as well. This is not about us trying to floss on y'all.
Right. You know? I mean, I'm looking at how you guys shot to the top. My observation of what's happening with Earn Your Leisure is that you are providing a service and education to people, and people become supporters of you, and they reshare, repost, and share everything that you got going on because you're helping people. What's in it for me? And if you can answer what's in it for me, for the person who's sitting across from you or who's on the other side of the TV screen or phone, That's how you get where you want to be, as far as if you're trying to land a TV show, be on radio, or whatever your dream is.
Hashtag big facts.
This is a public service announcement.
Yeah, you guys are good, because that's a perfect segment to our next topic, our new topic, which we're going to talk about what you guys are doing, and we're going to break down some numbers, hopefully. So, we're going to talk about that for sure. All right, so now we're going to go into what you guys actually are on TV for, as far as, you know, fixing up homes and flipping homes in Chicago, specifically in Southside Chicago, right? That's the area you focus on.
Southside.
All right. So, okay. So, what's the real estate opportunities? Because in Chicago, we're in Chicago, so I think it's important to talk about, highlight that. Before we start anything, what's Chicago real estate look like, and what's the real estate opportunities in Chicago?
There are a lot of opportunities in Chicago. Man, we have one of the hottest markets in the country.
Right. The question is, you know, it's just how are you starting? I mean, if you do have your credit and your money saved up, you know what I'm saying? As a first time home buyer, there's an enormous amount of opportunities. And we advise people that are starting off to go for cash flow. Mm-hmm. Go get that 3 or 4 unit property, or go get a 203K renovation loan or some kind of Fannie Mae construction loan, so that you can get a properties below market value, because there's thousands of I'm not talking about hundreds of properties. There's thousands of properties in the Chicagoland area.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That you can get below market value and renovate, and then turn that into a cash flowing property, or a property that you live in for a couple of years. You know, people talking about house hacking now. Mm-hmm. You know, live in for a couple of years and then, you know, sell it after 2 years. And now you got this check, and now you got capital to start a business or get another property or do multiple things.
So when you say below market value, like, what are we talking about as far as numbers? Like, what's an example of like a home that you just recently flipped, or something that you could like expect, like, okay, this is something that is typical.
Man, tell them about the one, the Bronzeville house.
You want to talk about Bronzeville? Yeah. No, you said the last property.
It doesn't have to be the last one. It could be what anyone.
Okay, well, all right. I do use this example a lot. So, so I got a 3,000 square foot graystone single family home.
What's graystone? What is that?
Like a brownstone.
Okay, a brownstone. Okay.
Because they're gray.
All right.
So I got a 3,000 square foot graystone in Bronzeville, which is a neighborhood on the south side. Got that for $200,000. Got it below market value because the recession was going on, and the guy was trying to sell it because he was in pre-foreclosure. So got it for $200,000. And I'd use a 203K renovation loan for that property. So that allowed me to have the money to purchase the property for $200,000. And I also rolled in $30,000 in renovation. Now, this property didn't require a gut rehab. I mean, $30,000, I did a couple of the bathrooms, redid the porch and the kitchen. And that's what I initially did. Made all of those things look brand new.
Didn't touch any of the drywall throughout the house, none of that type of stuff.
This is not a fixer-upper.
So this, this was just updating kitchens. A great opportunity.
And you only put 3% down, 3.5%.
3.5%. Okay. So I came to that closing with $7,700. So $7,700. And the reason why is because I couldn't negotiate because it was the bank and it was a foreclosure.
I don't want that to go with people's heads, because we talked about 203K loan actually with Jay Morrison, but we didn't go through a real world example. So this is good. Mm-hmm. So you got a $200,000 property, and then you had $30,000 for renovation costs.
Right.
So it's $230,000.
Was the full loan.
The 203K loan allows you to put 3 to 3.5% down.
Right.
But the 30K gets wrapped into the mortgage.
Right.
So 3% of 230 is like 7,000.
Seven five or something like that.
So you got the renovation and the home for, not including closing costs, but $7,000 is how much the down payment was.
Right.
Then with closing costs, how much was it with closing costs?
I mean, I came to closing total all in for
$7,700. How?
Did you roll that into the mortgage?
Yeah, because it was all rolled in.
Okay, right. You rolled it into the mortgage.
So, all right. That's good to know.
Actually rolled in 3 of the first month's payments into the loan also. So I didn't have to make my first payment until I was actually moving into the property, which was 90 days later.
That's because you were updating the bathrooms.
Right, all the updates and the renovations.
Okay. I'm sorry, I cut you off. So all right. So now speed it up. So all right, you got the property for $7,700. Right. Now you have it. Now what?
Now I have it. Renovation needed to start just about immediately. Mm-hmm. So in that process, I had already got 3 different contractors to give scope of work, so that I can decide which one I wanted to work with as far as you know, just completing the work and how much the materials would cost and things like
and,
that.
And you make the contractors very honest when they know that they're one of three
and they're competing.
What was that process like dealing with contractors? Because a lot of times people go into these deals and they say that's the toughest part is dealing with contractors.
We always push doing these 203K renovation loans because when you do a renovation loan, there is an inspector who comes behind the contractors on each draw or phase mm-hmm. of the project. Mm-hmm. The money comes each draw, let's say $30,000, you get $10,000 three times. Mm-hmm. The money comes to the homeowner, that $10,000, to pay the contractor. The contractor for the first draw has to do that $10,000 worth of work out of his own pocket.
Okay.
The contractor has to put his own money up.
Okay.
And has an inspector who comes to make sure that he's done the work up to code before the money is released to the homeowner to give to them for the next phase. So they don't make their profit until they finish all of the work because they had to go to do the first phase out of pocket. So now the homeowner is protected. So now there's no contractor getting over on you
or trying to convince you that the work is good enough.
Yeah. Quick question now, because I'm thinking like you guys are firefighters, and obviously you guys must know code, right? Did your experience as being firefighters help you during that process?
Yes, because I mean, as firefighters too, I mean we learn about building, construction, and we see a whole lot because we in the process of being a firefighter, you see houses that are like burned down and destroyed, so you see everything.
And we tear out a lot of walls and ceilings and things like that, so we're kind of on the other side of it.
Yeah, and then we also work with a lot of firefighters that happen to be in the trades, so you learn a lot through that process also. Mm-hmm. So I mean, the thing is, it removed all the fear because you actually had this inspector who comes and makes sure that the work is done complete.
Right. So all right, so okay, so now you started the bringing the contractors in. Mm-hmm. What's the next steps after that? Like, how long did it take to fully renovate it? When were you able to get tenants in? Like, what's the deal?
Well, this was a single family home, so I didn't have to deal with tenants. But I had 90 days to get the work done, and actually it got done in a shorter period than that. I think we were done in like 65, 70 days or whatever. So by the time I had to make my first mortgage payment, I was able to move my furniture in and start living.
You was living there?
Yeah, I lived there.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long did you live there?
I was there for about 3.5 years. My intention was to be there for 2 years because I knew that after 2 years, I would be able to sell the property, no capital gains. And also I knew that my credit would go back up because I did a short sale. See, we didn't include that. The condo that I had, I did a short sale on that. After 2 years, my credit went back up, and it coincided with my ability to sell this property with no capital gains. Mm-hmm. Now, I was enjoying myself so much that I actually ended up staying for a little bit longer than I anticipated.
Man, we had so many poetry sets and toga parties and
so you guys were both
shrimp boils.
You guys were both living in the property?
No.
So can you talk about that capital gains? You said that 2 years allowed you not to pay capital gains.
Right, so you had to be there 24 months. That's the rule.
What is capital gains?
Capital gains is the profit that you make on a property, the difference between how much you pay for it and how much you actually sold the property for. So the profit is the capital gain. And so the tax on the capital gain happens on properties that are not your primary residence or you haven't lived in as your primary residence for at least 24 months. So that's why I knew I needed to be there for at least 24 months in order to be able to collect those capital gains, which in this instance was $80,000 cash, and then be able to then have the capital to move on to buy a multi-unit property and then start flipping homes and then partnering with my brother to really start to do more than we had ever anticipated.
So if you don't live in a property for more than a year and you sell it, but you use the proceeds to buy another home, do you still have to pay capital gains?
You can do what they call a
1035?
Yeah, 1030 exchange.
The exchange. Right. Yeah, oh, that, he knew.
You already knew what you wanted to do. Well, there's different ways to slice it. Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah. I answered my own question. All right. So, okay.
The whole time that he was doing that, mind you, I'm also buying multi-unit buildings while he's doing that.
Right.
So by the time he sold that property 3.5 years later, I already had 2 3-unit buildings
that are cash flowing. And so it's like the two of us are like one person, right? Because I'm implying one strategy.
Yeah. And when his condo went from worth of 150 to being upside down to 30,000, I looked at that. I was like, I ain't never buying a condo. In fact, I ain't buying a house neither. You know, I'm going straight for the multi-unit apartment buildings.
Thanks for making that mistake, bro.
Yeah. Thanks. You know, somebody has to jump out there first.
Yeah.
Bust open. But the thing is, what we did learn, though, is we learned about the power of cash flow, and we learned about the power of buying properties below market value, and being able to get that cash and that leverage for us to then be able to go. Now I got this lump sum of money, and now it's like, okay, now let's buy another multi-unit property, for cash flow. Now let's go. We went hard money, did a flip that way, and then from there, now the wheels are turning. And now you got the next deal and the next deal, more confidence.
Right.
Things go wrong, and those, when you get burned, when you touch that stove, you don't ever touch it again. Mm-hmm. So different things that we learned about how we deal with contracts and stuff like that. Everything didn't just shoot perfectly, but it still was enabled us to make it to the point where we ended up on TV.
How much did you sell that property for?
I ended up selling that property for $315. Give the exact $316,500 or whatever it was, but yeah.
So in 2 years, you held it for 2 years?
Three.
It's not bad. So it's $116,000 profit that you made for 3 years, and you got it for $7,700. How much was your monthly mortgage?
My monthly mortgage was I think it was $1,400.
That's powerful. Really powerful because, especially in New York, we're paying rent for $1,900, $2,100,
$2,200
a month.
Where's that at?
And it's
right.
What?
2021? Is that? It's way
one bedroom.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not 3,000 square feet.
No
way.
Maybe so you saying it wasn't three bedrooms and four bathrooms?
No. Maybe 900 square feet.
No, man. 700 square feet. One bedroom, one bathroom.
That's rough, man.
Welcome and you got to pay for parking. Yeah. So you got a property for $7,000, paying under $2,000 a month, and you held it for a couple years and made $100,000 profit. I say that to say a lot of times people don't fully understand how attainable buying a home really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can. It's different programs and there's different ways. You have to educate yourself. That's one of the reasons of the podcast. But it's not as far-fetched as it may seem.
Yeah. No, it's not.
I think people live in fear, right? Because they've never seen it. Like I said earlier, we're first generation. So we don't know what we don't know. People don't know that these opportunities are out there. I had a question for you guys because I was driving in the Uber and I was looking around and the cab driver, I'm like, oh, it's the South Side. He's like, yeah, same thing it looked like 20 years ago. And I was like, all right, well, I see a lot of mom and pop stores. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, so there's been entrepreneurism in the community. And in retail space and in different commercial types of space. So what is the future for entrepreneurs? Are these opportunities out there for them to buy these spaces? What does it look like?
We have a frat brother with nail salon. Him and his wife have a nail salon, and it's a mixed use space. They have a Section 8 tenant upstairs that pays the mortgage for the entire property. So what they make is pure profit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the future there. We need us to buy those mixed use buildings, whether there's two or three or four apartments above and then two storefronts in the bottom. We need to grab all of those.
Yeah, and the thing is, there are city programs that you can get assistance for buying homes.
Yeah,
there
up to a quarter million.
City, county, and state. The thing is, wherever you live, you have to look and see what kind of homeowner assistance programs there are. For instance, when I had to come with that $7,700 in down payment, there may have been some kind of assistance program, but you got to do your own research.
Mm-hmm.
That could have paid that that $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
There are tons of those programs. And then for business owners, right here in Chicago, I can't remember the name of the program, Chicago Neighborhood something or another program that actually helps they'll match how much money you need in order to renovate a property for your business.
Okay.
Right. So there are these programs out there. Do the research because there's money out there from the government to help you create your business and buy your property.
So when we talk about Chicago, unfortunately, a lot of times when people think about Chicago, they hear about the violence, right? Especially on the South Side, West Side.
Mm-hmm.
So, we was driving in the Uber and I was telling the Uber driver where we was going. And he's like, you know where you going? Like, like you know where we going? Going. So I'm like, nah, I don't know where I'm going. He's like, ah, he started laughing. So, but I mean, to me, it looks just like the Bronx. Every neighborhood is similar. Mm-hmm. So like, what's one of the things that you can tell the people as far as like Chicago? Cause you know, when we come to these cities, we just don't want to stay in downtown. We want to touch like the real parts of the city.
Yeah.
And we want to give encouragement too. Like we had negative stuff, but obviously you're a perfect example of positive stuff that's coming out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. So like, what is the hopes to change the narrative of Chicago specifically, and what is the direction that you see, like as far as entrepreneurship or investing? Like, is it something that is encouraging at the moment?
I think it is encouraging. I mean, I think about the building that we're sitting in to do this podcast.
Right, we're in the Wood Line right now.
Yeah, so you know, shout out to Donnell.
Yeah, shout out to the Wood Line.
That owns this spot. I mean, he used his money to buy this property. He actually had there was a city assistance program to help fund this, and he's an example, and he's not the only one. The thing is, once you start to get it, you got to think about what circles you're in. Mm-hmm. We're always in these circles where we're talking to other people who are creating businesses in real estate, and it's happening all around you.
Right.
And we do see people popping up with these businesses on the South Side. There are these pockets. Think about when you walk in here. It's really nice, and it's not the only one.
Right. There's a podcast studio in this facility. There's a cafe downstairs, and they do like pop-up restaurants in there, and all of the pop-up restaurants owners are Black. You know, like that's what's coming now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one of I could think of several.
Yeah, I mean, shoot, Lighthouse, Mickey's Grill.
Yeah.
They have multiple locations.
Soul Shack is a like soul food restaurant.
Shout out to the Bureau Bar.
Yeah, Bureau Bar.
Exactly.
Hey, Fly Apparel. So I mean, they have these Sir and Madam, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know,
Sir and Madam,
so, which
out.
Is a clothing store.
Yeah. So and actually, their clothing is on 2K20 this year, the basketball.
Yeah, they just made it 2K.
Their clothes is made it in there. You can like the character you can create.
Yeah.
You can put the Sir and Madam clothing on your character.
That's
yeah.
Dope.
So Brian, Autumn, shout out to y'all for doing what you're doing. So yeah, the entrepreneurs can succeed. In Chicago, there are great stories happening in Chicago. And when you look at the people that show up for you all's networking social and different seminars that we're holding, there's a lot to be inspired and to think that great things are coming.
Nah, that's powerful, man. So we want to thank you guys, first and foremost, for joining us. Can you tell the people how to contact you, how to watch your show, any initiatives that you have going on?
Yeah, our Instagram is The Downing Brothers. You know, all one word, The DOWNING Brothers. And the same thing with our website, thedowningbrothers.com.
And you can catch us on, Instagram, Facebook, and our podcast, Homecoming with the Downing Brothers. You can find that on Apple.
What's the name of your TV show?
Double Down.
Double Down. And so, and be looking for where we end up next year, because we will be moving around.
Free agents, perhaps?
Free agency.
Troy.
Yeah, shout out to everybody on patreon.com/earnyourleisure. That's our Proud to Pay program. Y'all know how this works, man. Y'all been supporting us so amazingly. Every time we come on, I'm saying a new person's name. So shout out to y'all. It allows the podcast, the show, I should really say, to travel, to come to cities like Chicago and go around the city and interview some hometown heroes, man. Shout out to everybody in Houston who showed us love. LA showed us love. Obviously, Brooklyn, that's home base. They showed love. Atlanta showed love. So we want to go to your city, man. So keep supporting that. I just want to give a big shout out to David, who just joined at Tier 5. So shout out to him. And Broderick, who actually joined last night, and we met him at the event. So he was like, yo, that's me. I was like, I just typed you, man.
Shout out to him.
Yeah, so shout out to Broderick and everybody that's been supporting that's our Proud to Pay program once again. And shout out to everybody that's been supporting the merch, earnyourleisure.com. We have everything on there. Our tour t-shirts are on there. So the Chicago tour, that's up there. People are like, yo, well, how y'all picking the colors? So usually we try, like we said, we deal with sports and entertainment and the business side. So what we've been trying to do is match it with the football team or the basketball team's colors. So we try to get both the Bears colors in there, but we had a slight technical difficulty. But shout out to everybody that's been supporting on earnyourleisure.com and getting the merch.
Yeah, yeah, I need to get that assets over liability.
Don't you know what?
We got you.
Yeah. We got you, man. We brought someone else.
We got you. That's a fact. And yes. So thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Shout out to Chicago. Peace.
Yeah, peace.
Appreciate it.